room that you don't normally see.
Sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Special start time, 10 a.m. on this Saturday morning. We'll be here with you for 3 hours of hockey talk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, faithfully updated already on this Saturday morning by our good friend Dave Manouk of IllegalCurve.com, is exactly that, IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on the program this Saturday morning in about 30 minutes' time, we'll talk to Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com, preview tomorrow night's Jets-Blackhawks game, check in with our friends in Chicago to see how the perennial Western Conference contenders are doing so far this year. In about 1 hour's time, we're going to be joined by Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers, has done so for a number of years, and has been a guest on this show as well for a number of years. Talk about the Rangers, the Jets' opponent tonight at Madison Square Garden, 6 p.m. puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. And then at the top of the third hour, 12 noon, a very special Saturday spotlight, the co-owner of the Florida Panthers, Doug Sifu, is going to join us. Richie sat down with him yesterday to talk about ownership of an NHL team, in a non-traditional market, and everything to do with the Florida Panthers and how he got to this point in his career. So stay tuned for that. The top of the final hour for about 30 minutes, one-on-one Saturday spotlight with Doug Sifu of the Florida Panthers.
Sifu, Drew.
Sifu?
Sifu.
Oh, pardon me. I already started off. You see, you could have let me know that before the show starts.
I didn't know you were gonna Sifu it.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, Drew had seafood for dinner last night, so you'd think that he would kind of get that name right.
Yeah. Oh, well, I apologize immediately then. Doug Sifu of the Florida Panthers.
Well, it's tough because, the interview yet, so
yeah,
don't
it's
worry.
A tough name to pronounce with the C, you know, kind of acting as an S there, because C also can be a K, so it's fine, Drew.
I'll give you a pass, Drew, because I had to confirm the pronunciation before the interview.
There you go. Thank you. Appreciate the support you guys give me. And those are my colleagues, of course, on this fine program, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Pleased to see producer Timmy behind the board today, getting us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Gentlemen, let's start with the Winnipeg Jets in the week that has been so far. Obviously, they started on Long Island with that 4-3 victory on Tuesday, and then they got that 2-1 shootout loss on Thursday against the New Jersey Devils, a result in which they probably, I would say, deserved better, but they didn't have the necessary killer instinct to put away a New Jersey Devils team, and it ended up costing them 1 point in the standings.
Yeah, it absolutely did, and you look at how this road trip has started, and it started pretty well for the Winnipeg Jets. 3 out of a possible 4 points. As you mentioned, Drew, they were 3 minutes away from leaving New Jersey with a 1-0 win, and Michael Ryder obviously got a really nice goal there, tied it up, went to the shootout, and it's a coin flip at that point, Richie, but I thought that the Winnipeg Jets played a very strong game against a New Jersey Devils team, and you guys know I'm a big Devils fan, that did not look good at all. And it's a team that was obviously missing Mike Camilleri, their big free agent acquisition. But aside from Mike Camilleri, it's a team to me that's kind of put together. The Lions are kind of, there's a mixture of kind of toughness, but there's a lack of scoring and the defense is slow. And I thought a guy like Adam Larson, who'd only played 2 games this year up until that point, had a really good game. But to me, it's a team that has a lot of question marks, a lot of problems that I think Lou Lamoriello has to address, Rishi. The New Jersey Devils, to me, were a team that the Winnipeg Jets matched up really well against. And as Drew mentioned, I think, you know, they're a Mark Scheifele post away from from leaving there with the 2-0 win. So you have to like how they've started this road trip off. And, you know, they're playing a couple of very good teams. You're talking about both teams that went to the conference finals last year. You're talking about the Rangers. You're talking about going to the Stanley Cup finals. You know, it's the most impressive aspect of the way the Jets have played here, getting points in their last three games, is the way they've played defensively. And I think you got to give credit where credit is due. You know, Zach Bogosian coming back after missing the game against the Islanders, I thought he was pretty good. And you look at the way they've played, they've kept the games low scoring. They've been pretty boring games. They haven't been very exciting games. The Islanders game was exciting. Yeah. But that Devils game, yeah. I mean, wake me up when it's over.
Yeah, Pavlik's been really solid. You know, people are quick to harp on his negatives, and he's certainly had some points, you know, through the past few years that he struggled mightily, but he's been pretty solid this year, I think, overall. As he mentioned, defensively in the Islanders game, I thought they were gaping holes, and they can't open it up that way. To Ezzie's point, you need to play a better defensive system. You saw, you know, Postma getting beat for a breakaway, and Party, and guys getting burned pretty quick when you don't have the support necessary in, to be able to alleviate those opportunities, and you're going to struggle. But against the Devils, who aren't the fastest team, as they're a little slower, older team, and against Colorado, who's a fast team, they were able to kind of eliminate those opportunities and cut down on the odd man rushes against. So overall, I agree with Ezzie. I mean, you start off this trip and you've got 3 of 4 points, and that's pretty impressive. Sure, you wanted to have won the Devils game, and you need to be able to win games at some point. And by that, I mean, you can't keep blowing these leads. Even the 3-1 Islanders lead 3-all right away. Mm-hmm. 1-0 Devils, be able to shut it down. Well, and Pavlik said that after the game. He said, we have to be able to shut it down. But how many times have we heard Andrei Pavlik say that? He speaks quite a bit with the media. How many times have we heard him say that? So I was on with Rick yesterday for a little bit, and he made the point. I mean, you know, 4-5-1 through this year's first 10, 4-5-1 through last year's first 10. And I read, I think it was Bruce McCurdy in the Edmonton Journal wrote that 23% of games from the first lockout to this past season end up going to overtime.
23%.
So 3-point games are basically 1 in every 4.
Sure.
So you have to be able to put streaks together. And these lost opportunities, while in a vacuum might not look so bad because you're getting a point or two on the road, they count over the course of the year. They add up.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you go back to sort of talking about the style of play. And yeah. I mean, it's sort of ironic given the week that was that, you know, the Jets play on Tuesday and they get the victory. But if they play in that style of play, you know, more often than not, they're not going to be able to succeed.
This is true. Absolutely.
Whereas they play Thursday in a much better style of play and they don't end up getting the victory.
It's a good point.
You know, just it sort of, you know, flips on its head. But they have to, if they keep playing like they play on Thursday, you know, that's the recipe for success.
And Sunday.
Yes, and the previous Sunday against Colorado, yes.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know, you know, how much success is really there to be had, but there's obviously some amount of success, and it's only going to come if you play that sort of dull, conservative style, I mean, as opposed to opening it up like they did on Tuesday.
And obviously we haven't talked about Evander Kane's addition to the lineup. Huge. I mean, not only, again, we've talked a lot about the depth factor, limiting the role of other players. I want to talk about the fourth line in the segment in a second here, Drew. Limiting the role of other players. But also, Kane's just so talented, so fast, so big. Just puts so much pressure on the other team. And, you know, while he's not the best passer, makes his teammates better by being on the ice, creating space.
Well, you saw it in that play with where he goes in on the forecheck against Andy Green, and the puck comes right out to Blake Wheeler. That's the one where Wheeler deked out Corey Schneider but ran out of room and hit the side of the net.
When you're almost in on the breakaway, too. When you're fast and you're willing to be physical, which he is, you can cause a lot of havoc on the forecheck. So, I mean, his addition is huge. And I know that line, you know, Wheeler gets the goal. It's on a beautiful pass by Enstrom. But the idea is that line needs to have some more time. And they had some chances, obviously, the Scheifele post. But I want to talk about the fourth line. There was Ed Tate's article this morning in the Free Press talking about the stat line.
0 points.
For the fourth line. And it's actually interesting because Ed writes about this interesting article Ed wrote. You can find that on Illegal Curve. But Ed talks about how the fourth line has no points, and then I read an article about Dave Nonis. It was, I believe it was Pierre LeBrun and ESPN talking with Ron Hextall and Dave Nonis guys about, but amongst other things, the importance of a fourth line. And you look at it, And I think it was Hextall said, you know, we need 2 to 3 to 4 minutes a night extra from those guys the way the league's built right now. You know, paraphrasing there. The Jets don't have that, and they're also riding Pavlicard, which Rick and I spoke about yesterday. So I do have concerns, and it's very early, I know, but I have concerns that if you're not going to be trusting the fourth line because they're not producing, and rightfully so, if I were Paul Maurice, I wouldn't trust the fourth line. And if I'm riding Pavlik really hard right now, like Paul Maurice is, and I know as you want to talk about, you know, who's going to play in these back-to-backs, I have concerns down the road that the better players in this squad are going to wear down. Not now, probably not at the 30-game mark, but at the 50-60 game mark, I have some concerns. So if they're around the playoff race then, which I think would be surprising people if they were very close, but I think everybody's going to be, you know, almost everybody is close. That's something that I'd keep in mind.
Well, to your point there, Richard, and as we'll let you get in on this in a second, to your point there, I mean, I was, you know, watching Thursday's game, and yeah. I mean, you're almost surprised to see the fourth line on the ice during the third period mm-hmm. of the game. You know, I think they had a shift. I don't know the time that the shift was at. Maybe at the, you know, at 5 minutes into the third period.
Sure.
And I either said it out loud to Laura or I thought it to myself, you know, well, that's the last shift we're going to see of the fourth line. Because you're surprised to see them there because, you know that they're, mm-hmm. you know, you understandably, they just aren't good enough to really play significant minutes, especially in a close game. In the third period.
Right. And part of that had to do with, you know, you had Peluso going out, who wasn't playing a consistent spot in the lineup, and then mm-hmm. you had Kane going out, so you had Chris Thorburn playing on the third line, but we know that Thorbs is more of a fourth line guy, but it's an absolute problem, guys, in this day and age, and it's always been the case. I mean, you know, you go back to the days, you know, of the Devils, you know, having guys like Turner Stevenson or Grant Marshall on the fourth line.
Good references.
No, but I mean, they have a role. And uh-huh. I think for me, this fourth line, and it's Chris Thorburn and it's Jim Slater and it's either TJ Gagliardi or Matt Halaschuk, or when Peluso's healthy, maybe Peluso, they haven't found their identity yet. And I think you look at Jim Slater. Look at Jim Slater's faceoff stats, guys. He's top 10 in the league.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Jim Slater's having a good year in the faceoff circle. He's having a good year on the penalty kill. I think he needs to be given credit for uh-huh. the job. I mean, the Jets have a great penalty kill. I think TJ Gagliardi, even though he doesn't have a point yet in 10 games, which is an issue, he's doing a good job in the penalty uh-huh. kill. Uh-huh. And so they have to be commended for that. But on the other hand,
problem is if you're losing games, you can't, you know, you can never roll out your fourth line, right? Because you can't put any points
on the
board.
That's the issue. The 10 games in, Richie, and TJ Gagliardi, Jim Slater, Chris Thorburn, Anthony Peluso, Matt Halaschuk have 0 points. They have no points, and that's an issue. And you know I'm a big fan of the GST line uh-huh, and all that.
Absolutely.
But I mean, you got to get some production from those guys.
Definitely.
And again, Paul Maurice isn't sending Chris Thorburn out on a regular basis thinking, oh yeah, we need a goal from Chris Thorburn. But I mean, we're talking about just balancing out the scoring.
Right.
And the kind of, as a corollary, Drew, the third line's not producing that much. I mean, you've got Matthew Perreault now back, but he was up on the top mm-hmm. line. But, I mean, you've had Gagliardi up there, and Buff hasn't put the puck in the net enough. Even though Buff's been a very good player on a consistent basis, he's only got one goal. So you're not getting a lot of production from the bottom six. And if you think about it, that's the big issue with this Jets team right now. They're getting good goaltending. They're playing better defensively. They've got the goals against down, but they're not getting balanced scoring. You can't expect Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Shifley to get all your goals on a consistent basis.
I'm just surprised Drew didn't have a coronary when you use the word corollary.
That's very clever there, Richard. To your point about I'm willing to give the third line a little more time because, you know, now that they've got their top nine back sort of together, we'll see what happens with Perreault and with you know, playing with Lowry and Bufflin.
There's talent there, Drew. I mean, there's talent there. I maybe you mix it up and whether you want to switch Lowry, Perreault, center, wing, depending on the situation. Bufflin can create offense.
Bufflin has been one of the better players.
So can Perreault. And Lowry's is a good addition, I think, to, again, is it too much too soon? Very well, maybe. But is a good addition in terms of he can complement those players in some ways. So I wouldn't worry too much about that line right now. It's because there's talent there. You know the talent is there to get something out of them.
Well, and to your point about the fourth line on Thursday though, mm-hmm. and talk about their production, I mean, here's the shifts. You know, TJ Gagliardi in the third period played a grand total of 2 minutes and 5 seconds on the ice in the third period.
And that kills you, by the way. We're coming up to today, tonight's game, tomorrow, back-to-backs. You have to be able to play your fourth line, guys.
Sure. I mean, he played a minute at the start of the third period.
Mm-hmm.
At the, you know, he started the shift at the 17:56 mark of the, or sorry, 2 minutes and 4 seconds into the third period, mm-hmm. he started a shift and it was a minute long. Then he played another shift at 4:48 of the third period, and it was 51 seconds long. And then he had another shift at the 13:28 mark of the third period, and it was 11 seconds. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, this is a guy, you know, he's playing a grand total of 2 minutes in the third period for you. It's not enough. Guy like Chris Thorburn, same idea. He played a minute 41 in the third period on Thursday night. Jim Slater plays a little bit more than these guys because of his face-off duties.
He comes on just for face-offs at times, which I like.
That's right. Well, both Gagliardi and Slater have been on the penalty kill. Thorburn does not play on the penalty kill, Drew, but your point is well taken.
Yeah.
Because this is the issue here, and you know, further than, you know, just looking at their ice time, which is obviously important to provide context for what we're talking about here, but it's because I don't feel like a lot of the time these guys are getting in the flow of the game. I feel like when you're only going out for 1 or 2 minutes a period, you can't be as effective. And of course, especially when you're down a goal, you're down two goals, you're not going to see your fourth line on most teams, not just the Winnipeg Jets. You're not going to see the fourth line because you're going to probably rely more on your top six and then the third line, and you go to three lines. But you look at the good teams, and this doesn't just, you know, translate to the last couple of years. This goes back to forever.
Yep.
You got to get those guys in the game, and you got to roll them out, and they have to play a role. They have to either, you know, set the tone physically or whatever it is. They have to contribute.
If the Jets' fourth line isn't playing against New Jersey's fourth line, you know, assuming you're matching fourth line against fourth line,
it's harder on the road to do that.
It's harder on the road to do it. But if they're not playing, you know, against, you know, the New Jersey Devils' fourth line, what fourth line are they able to play against? Because New Jersey's fourth line isn't anything to write home about.
I didn't see their minutes in that game, but I mean, that would be something to take into account.
Yeah, you've got guys like Steven Gionta, and you've got Tuomo Ruutu, and I think you either had Reed Boucher on there. When Tutu's healthy, they've had the Devils. They don't have a real. The Devils are all over the place.
Sure,
the Devils' lines are all screwed up.
It was Gionta, Josefsson, and Ruutu.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, it's not
it's
enough
not a
time.
Bad fourth line, Drew.
What's that?
It's not a bad fourth line.
It's not a bad fourth line.
It's a lot
line.
Of money on the fourth line.
Right. I mean, they're overpaying Ruutu, but I mean, when can you play Slater, Gagliardi, and Thorburn if it's not against...
I don't disagree with you, and this is the problem. Is, again, I'm not blaming Paul Maurice for the lack of ice time for the players, because Claude Noel did the same thing, really. Again, we're talking about the similar situations. I know you want to talk about Maurice and experience, et cetera. But they look down the bench and they don't trust the guys that they have there, and that has been an ongoing theme for some time.
Right.
Remember when the GS sort of interrupted us, when the GST line kind of flourished, they were essentially the team's third line, if you recall.
Yeah,
like they became
right.
The team's third line, really. So
yeah, but you know, to I know we were up against the break here, Drew, but talking about, you know, they're having trouble putting the puck in the net. Then, you know, you got to look at your fourth line and say, this line, and we know Jim Slater and Chris Thorburn can be responsible, so can TJ Gagliardi. You're looking at an energy line, and you know, hopefully they can contribute some offense, but you still have to rely on them for that role. And I think for this line, that's really what they have to be. They have to be a responsible line, provide some energy. If Thorbs needs to drop the gloves once in a while against the other team, he'll do it. But the point is, they have to be involved in the game. When you play 5 or 6 minutes a game, sometimes it's tough.
No argument there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll start our look at the Jets weekend upcoming. We'll start in Chicago. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. The hour of 10. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. In about 10 minutes' time, we'll be joined by Scott Powers of ESPNChicago.com to talk about the Blackhawks. In the meantime, let's get you set for tomorrow night's game, an 8 p.m. puck drop. Late night for a Sunday game, 8 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290 tomorrow and TSN 3, of course. Richie, you're doing pre and post tomorrow?
Yeah, it does start, yeah. The game is at 8 because it's in my schedule for 7.
Oh, well. Yeah.
So then that's an hour before, yeah?
That would be an hour before.
That's a late game.
Yeah, not 100% sure why, but that's okay.
You mentioned the Bulls were playing, though.
I know, I'm speculating. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, that was the only logical answer I could come up with. Why else?
Maybe the Bears, too. Are they at home?
The Bears are on a bye week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, so that they can go another week without them imploding on national television.
They are on a bye week, yeah.
So, anyways, whatever the point is. The game's at 8 o'clock tomorrow. You can settle in for that.
Before we get into you know, previewing the Jets and Rangers and the Jets and Blackhawks, you know, it was Halloween yesterday.
It was?
And I just want to talk about your most recent Instagram pic, Krabby.
Yeah, the Bulls don't play tomorrow. yeah, I wouldn't mind talking about that picture, too. My brother showed it to me.
Okay.
Where did you get that hat?
You're wearing a devil hat, or what kind of hat is it?
No, it's a crab.
It's a gigantic crab.
You don't need to wear a costume to be crabby, Drew.
I know, but that's what made it all the funnier, is that it was finally a costume that encompasses what it's like to be me.
So while I was interviewing Doug Sifu, Drew was dressing up as Sifu.
Yeah. There you go. That works as well.
I got to be honest, Drew, and I know we had our recent issues here. If you don't follow IC Drew and IC SEG, Drew actually unfollowed me after I mocked him for beating him in the fantasy football draft.
I didn't hear about that.
And Drew unfollows me probably, or not, blocks or unfollows? Blocks,
well,
same
when,
thing.
I wouldn't ever unfollow you, but because when I block you, it automatically unfollows you, so I have to then go unblock you and then re-add you, and it's a whole, you know.
Yeah, but to my credit, and
I should have muted you is what I should have done.
So just so everyone knows, Richard's brother runs the fantasy football draft.
That's not the least bit true. I run the fantasy football draft.
Well, you and Richard's brother Adam run the fantasy football draft.
Not true.
Well,
go on.
Okay, he has run it in the past with me. And Dave Manuk and I are on the same team. And last week, after the Saturday show, you were saying, oh, I'm going to beat you guys, and you're going to hear about it, and I'm going to tweet about it. So Dave and I said, okay, if Drew's going to be like that, then we're going to tweet at him.
One, it was after the Thursday night game that I said I was going to mock you guys. And then two, yes, you beat me handily. But that's you know, everybody's been beating my team in fantasy football.
What's your record,
year.
Drew?
It's a struggle. It's 2-5, I believe.
It's been 8 weeks.
Then it's 2-6. I've lost track of it's been a struggle this year.
Richie, the tweet that set Drew off was Tony Romo went down with an injury in that game, and I just tweeted, Tony Romo injured, and then ad-tweeted Drew, and then he responded, blocked. It was great.
Yeah, it was time for me to block you anyways. Tomorrow night, the Jets and the Blackhawks at the United Center in Chicago, of course. The Blackhawks, 6-3-1 to start the year, 13 points in their first 10 games. You know, it's really just, I mean, almost the entire regular season for the Blackhawks this year is almost like the exhibition season.
Well, I think that goes to the point we were talking about on Wednesday, in that I think some of these teams, it's kind of becoming the NBA, in that some of these teams, you know, are going to be there. It's just a matter of where they end up in the standings. Whereas I feel like a few years ago, you really didn't know of any teams, you know, which teams are going to make it and not make it. So I think there's a bit of a divide there. But yeah, Drew, I mean, I don't think Chicago's played their best hockey by any means. I mean, they've had some struggles by the likes of, you know, Marian Hossa and other players on the squad, but they just need to make sure they're rounding into form at the right time. You need to develop good habits, and that's the whole thing about, you know, Ken Dryden wrote in the game that you can't just turn it on. You have to be able to come and develop a process and master that process heading into the playoffs. So, yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs. I mean, you look at their record and you'd say, oh, they're pretty solid. They're probably not that happy with it, to be honest. So 6-3-1, and they, you know, they're a +8 goal differential. They're all that stuff, but there's some games they've looked really good, and there's some games they haven't looked so good. And so when you're Joel Quenneville, you want to get a little bit more consistency.
Yeah. High-class problems for the Blackhawks to have.
100% high-class problems. But, you look, I mean, in this day and age, they have 13 points over a 10-game span. They'll be okay if they keep that up.
Sure. I mean, they'll be right in the thick of it. And, I mean, and they obviously don't need home ice advantage. It's helpful for them, but they didn't have it last year. They did have it last year in the conference finals,
yes.
And they ended up losing that game. So, I mean, they'll be fine wherever they play and whatever matchups they end up with. They're the best team in the Central Division. I don't think you guys will disagree with me on that point.
If they're not the best team, they're not very far away from the best team. You know, pick your poison, St. Louis, if you think Dallas is going to finish higher. I don't think so. I think Chicago still will win the division, and Colorado's obviously started to play better. But, you know, Chicago's gone through a bit of a transition here, and it's not just bringing Brad Richards in, and I know they wanted him to kind of, everyone, I guess, expected him to kind of play the second-line center role, but Andrew Shaw's actually playing that role right now, and Brad Richards is playing that third-line role, and, you know, he struggled. He hasn't got a goal yet. He started to play better, and Scott Powers wrote about that for ESPN. We'll talk to him about it coming up right here. But, you know, a guy like Nick Leddy, you know, Richie touched on this on Wednesday. I mean, they're a really good defensive team. And when you have Keith and Seabrook, arguably the best pair in the NHL, who play 25, 30 minutes a game sometimes, you know, you can mask that a little bit. But I think we're starting to see, especially the way Nick Leddy has played on the Islanders, sure, they've had their defensive issues themselves in New York. But, you know, you've kind of tried to bring in Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who's James Van Riemsdyk's brother, and tried to replace him, and they've had struggles with that. The lines are a little bit all over the place. They've had Brian Bickle playing up there with Taves and Hossa, and that's usually where Sharp plays. But, you know, this team, again, as we were just talking about, this team struggled last year early, and they got it together, and they didn't win the division. But it's all about the playoffs, and if you're a team in the Western Conference, that's the last team you want to play.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, and they're likely, you know, given, you know, they were pretty much the same team as they were at the end of last year, with the exception of bringing in Richards, and they're only going to, they're just sort of going through the fine-tuning process from now until, I would say the trade deadline, almost.
I think there's a couple of keys here if you're the Blackhawks. Yeah, you want to have your best players playing their best, and you have to make sure guys like veterans like Hossa are going, right? I mean, that's important for them because the depth in the National Hockey League, especially in the Western Conference, is vital. But as he talks about Leddy, and that's a transition game issue for me. I mean, Leddy's not going to be the best defensively, but he's very good taking the puck through the neutral zone, and he can make a nice first pass. Getting that defensive, getting that transition game working is key for the way Chicago plays and the style that
somebody to replace what Nick Leddy did there
likes to employ. Now, I haven't seen Trevor Van Riemsdyk play, so I can't comment in terms of his replacing Leddy, but obviously they felt confident enough in who they had in the system, plus the money savings they needed to.
And this is his first NHL experience. I mean, he's coming out of college.
Right. But one thing is, you know, you got Brad Richards right now. They tried him with Kane. That wasn't necessarily working. Richards isn't a great skater, right? So he fits in talent-wise with that squad. But the reason he came at such a cheap rate is because there's little risk involved. But also, other teams realize the fact that he can't keep up with the pace of the National Hockey League. Now, the pace of the National Hockey League is one thing. The pace that the Chicago Blackhawks play at is a whole different thing. And sure. You look at who's on their roster. Very few of the players on their roster are poor skaters. And Brad Richards is not a good skater. So Brad Richards right now, instead of lining up with a guy like Kane, they're lining him up with Versteeg, who's not a great skater either, and then Patrick Sharp, you know, who can move around.
Sometimes Jeremy Morin is also subbing in there as well.
So, I mean, the lines change all the time. But the idea is they're trying to find a different chemistry, and that's a high skill level line, but a different kind of pace line. Like Brandon Saad and Patrick Kane, guys, really good skaters, keep a high pace. So they're going to try and create offense on that third line, and I think that's important. If you watch last year at times, you know, obviously that secondary center has been a problem for the Blackhawks, but, you know, high-class problem, as you mentioned, Drew, for a team that wins the Cup. Mm-hmm. They like to get three lines rolling offensively. That's the key for them. And I think this is what the season's going to be about, is meshing these guys in and out and seeing if it works. If Richards doesn't work, if they determine at the end of the year that midway through the year, he doesn't work, they can cut ties. There's no real issues there. They can make a trade.
They also got Tuvo Teravainen and sitting there, you know, getting ready, just getting experience and getting even more seasoning under his belt.
They do.
And I mean, I think that they're sort of saying, you know, we might not be able to necessarily go out and trade for somebody because we have salary cap issues.
Sure.
But, you know, Teravainen plays 40 games in the AHL this year, or he plays, you know, however many games until he's ready. He can come up, and we hope that he can then fill in that role if Brad Richards isn't available. Sort of like Pearson and Toffoli did with the Kings last year, coming up and being that sort of spark plug later in the season, a young guy with a lot of upside.
It's a really good point. Scouts love Teravainen and where he was drafted. And he was a guy that was given a bit of a look last year, and they decided to send him to Rockford this year. But, you know, Brad Richards, they want him to essentially play a little bit of a different role, but kind of like the way Michael Hanzus played on the team that won their last cup. And, you know, because we know this guy, and this was the case last year, we all saw it. When Taves and Kane are going, what did they get? 7 of the 8 game-winning goals last year, and what was it, in the first couple of rounds?
Something like that.
When those guys turn it up, and those guys always turn it up, they're pretty much unbeatable, I guess, unless you're the LA Kings.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com will join us. Talk more about the Blackhawks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show from ESPNChicago.com our good friend Scott Powers. Scott, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
How you doing?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
That's good. Scott, before we start, and we'll get into the Blackhawks, sort of a weird start time, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Any idea why?
I believe it's television, but I guess I just go with the flow and don't ask too many questions. So I believe it's television related, but I do not know for sure.
Okay, we were wondering the same thing. We assume television because that's usually what the driving force behind everything is.
Yeah, Scott, can you maybe get them to move up the game to 6? Drew wants to be in bed by 10.
Drew wants a warm glass of milk.
Yeah, I'd actually prefer that too, so I'll see if I can do this both.
I see. There you go. Scott and I are kindred spirits. I could tell he enjoys a nice earlier start on a Sunday evening. Scott, Blackhawks 6-3-1 through their first 10. I mean, we know that this team is going to be, you know, barring some sort of catastrophic injury, this team is going to be a dominant force, and the real season for the Blackhawks doesn't start until the playoffs begin. Is there any fear at all in that dressing room that there's sort of, somewhat of an apathy that could seep in the course of the regular season?
No, I think they got taught a lesson last regular season where obviously they went pretty far still and were a goal away from going back to the final. But, their regular season was pretty inconsistent. And, if Corey Crawford doesn't really step up in that first round against the Blues, I think the Blackhawks are eliminated there. And it would go back to their just inconsistency in the regular season and not really being able to put together. They were so concentrated on not having that Stanley Cup hangover last year, and I thought they played pretty well the first month or two of the season, but it seemed like the season wore on them, and especially after the Olympic break, they just weren't the same team, and you really couldn't get into a role, and I think some of that led to some of the struggles, and they weren't playing great hockey at all times during the playoffs. It was Corey Crawford stepped up in those first two series and probably stole them some victories, and the Kings outplayed them throughout much of that series. So I think that some of that's on their mind where they feel like they need to have a better regular season and get some of that consistency rolling in the playoffs where you can't just expect to turn it on come that time.
Scott, we were talking about the forward line combinations, and as you know, they've kind of been all over the place. You're kind of used to seeing the big line of Sharp, Taves, and Hossa, and everybody was expecting Brad Richards to center Brandon Saad and Patrick Kane there on the second line, but you've got Brian Bickell playing a little bit on the first line. You've got Patrick Sharp playing on the second line with Patrick Kane, and then Andrew Shaw centering the second line. Is this just a question of Joel Quenneville mixing up the lines, finding out what he likes? And are you a little bit concerned at all about how they haven't really found some consistency in the lines?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's finding what he likes, but more what works right now. I think eventually they're going to, he always kind of reverts back to that Sharp, Taves, Hossa line. And, Kane's with a lot of different players, but I think him and Saad make a lot of sense. Who that second line center still is a big question, but they haven't scored a lot of goals, especially in 5-on-5 situations so far. They finally broke through a little bit against Ottawa on Thursday, but prior to that they had really struggled where a lot of their goals were coming on the power play or even some shorthanded goals. So 5-on-5 plays really been a struggle. You look at someone like Patrick Kane, who has 1 point on 5-on-5 all season. That was a goal, and usually he's a guy that even despite whoever his line mates are, he's usually able to contribute in some way. So I think Quinville's a little bit desperate in just trying to figure out something that's going to click for a little bit. And, whether he sticks with that, it'll kind of depend on the success of that. But I always think he goes back to lines that that make a little bit more sense, at least during the regular season. He likes a little bit more consistency in the playoffs, and he'll start using that blunder again. But right now I think they're just looking for something that has a little bit of success. Even, a guy like Brian Bickell started on the first line on Thursday, and he ended up sitting most of the third period after a bad turnover. He had one shift in the third period. So, Quinville's mixing and matching a lot right now, and he's just looking for something that's clicking.
Scott, why do you think Patrick Kane's struggling at 5-on-5?
I think that he's, it doesn't seem like he's just in sync right now, and I think some of that's too with, there was a lot of thought that Brandon Saad, Andrew Shaw, Kane Lyon would click a lot again like it did in the playoffs, and Quinville saw in the last preseason game they looked really good, but it hasn't worked. Andrew Shaw, he has a lot of ability, has certain skills, but I think he's still more suited for the third line center. I think someone more offensively minded would work better for Kane. Saad struggled a little bit, and some of it's on Kane too. I felt like he played pretty well early in the season, and he was getting some shots, and those shot totals aren't up there anymore. And the possession game is usually what what Kane's line is effective with, and so far their Corsi and the possession numbers are down, and the numbers even through these first 10 games are worse than any numbers he had all of last season. So I think there's some different elements, but I'd be curious if Quinville would eventually try Brad Richards again with Saad and Kane. You know, it was something that it was certainly talked about when Richards signed with the Blackhawks, and then throughout the preseason, it was those guys played, and I thought they played pretty well together. And then all of a sudden, you know, last second, Quinville throws Shaw back in there, and Richards really hasn't had an opportunity. And it's not as if Richards has really come out flying either, but I feel like he's played better, a little bit better these last few games, and probably deserves that chance. You know, he's a little bit better at faceoffs, and I think he's a more offensively gifted player than Shaw. And especially with them struggling, there's probably a reason why to at least try it and see what happens.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks, Jets, and the Blackhawks tomorrow night, 8 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Scott, you mentioned that, you know, there's still, you know, Andrew Shaw hasn't really been able to fill that second line center role. Brad Richards, you know, hasn't been able to fill that role either. You know, how close of an eye are they keeping on Tuuvo Teravainen down in Rockford in the AHL?
Yeah, and I think they're keeping a real close eye. And the problem is they just don't have a spot for him. And, you know, the Blackhawks, Quinville, and their general manager, Stan Bowman, said during, you know, before training camp that, you know, be up the table to remind him whether he'd, you know, he'd prove himself there in that spot. But the reality was that there was never a spot to take. You know, this is a team that had 12 forwards, even 13 when they signed Carcillo. You know, he likes having an enforcer-type player, not necessarily still is that much of an enforcer, but someone that's, you know, a little bit more of an agitator. But, you know, there was never, unless they were going to trade someone or someone suffers an injury, there just wasn't a spot for Teravainen. When you look down the lineup and you have Taves, Shaw, Kruger, Richards as your centers, that, and obviously they're stacked with forwards too, that, you know, I think even if Teravainen was lighting up in the AHL, he's been good. I wouldn't say great yet, but there's no spot for him. And I think when you signed Richards, the Blackhawks had to, the idea that they're gonna wait a little bit longer, and he just turned 20 years old, and you know, from what I've seen, I think he's the real deal. He is a special passer and sees the ice real well, and probably someone that could like contribute, especially with a team struggling offensively right now. But you know, their plan has always seemed to be you know, let him, you know, maybe experience a little bit more North American hockey and at the AHL level and get a little bit bigger and stronger, and just so that seems to be the timetable. And I really don't think, unless something, there is a serious injury to a top six, maybe a top nine guy, that he probably won't get a call up for a while.
Scott, right before you had we had you on, we were talking about the Blackhawks D, and we were talking about Nick Leddy and how the Hawks really seem to be missing Nick Leddy. Obviously, he's been a part of the team for quite some time now, not anymore. But we wanted to ask you about Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who's played 10 games for the Blackhawks this year. What has your impression been of him 10 games?
Yeah, he's been impressive. You know, he's really solid, really poised. His confidence is there, and you know, he really hasn't looked out of place. You know, he was a surprise. He wasn't expected to make that team out of training camp. The Blackhawks have the younger defensemen prospects they've had for a couple of seasons that they thought were around the cusp, and Van Riemsdyk came out of nowhere. And you know, he's like, even the guy last year, he'd suffered an injury his, you know, his junior year of college, and I think some teams backed off, you know, kind of wondering where he was at. And you know, he took a chance signing the Blackhawks, considering their depth at that position, and he really proved himself throughout. You know, started with the rookie tournament in London, and he played really well and caught some people's eyes, and that continued throughout the training camp, where all of a sudden other guys were getting sent down, and he stayed up. And I think through 10 games, you know, he's had a few mistakes, and you know, some some small pockets of misplay, but outside from that, he's really been good. And I feel like he's brought some stability to that that back end of the defense. There were some question marks about those fifth and sixth defensemen coming in the season, especially with Leddy, you know, being gone. That you know, Leddy had been such a stability back there for a while now, that they needed someone. And I think Ken Riemsdyk, I think he's only going to get better as well. I think he has some offensive ability, and as he gets more confidence and, you know, becomes a little bit more aggressive, I think the Blackhawks can get some offense out of him. But yeah, I think he's been a savior for them. Just the fact that he's been able to provide some stability back to where there were certainly question marks entering the season.
Final question, Scott. You talk about Joel Quenneville kind of mixing up the lines. How challenging is it for a coach? We know obviously how challenging it is to win, but once you've won and won multiple times, how challenging is it for Joel Quenneville to keep this group focused and motivated throughout an 82-game season when it's very likely they're going to be a, you know, a top Western Conference seed or and go through the Central Division like they have in the past few years?
Yeah, no, I think there's some challenge, but it's a veteran group that's been together for a while, and there are a lot of guys in that locker room that keep them focused. You know Taves and Kane, and you know, not even Kane so much, but Sharp and Seabrook and Keith, and you go down the line, and even you add in someone like Richards, who's obviously been a captain elsewhere, and you know, been a leader. That it just doesn't seem like a group that really falls off. Just doesn't lose that focus that often. So. I'm sure at times it's an issue, and I think last year was challenging with the short break and the Olympic break and all that, all the guys in the Olympics, and maybe some of last year's they struggled and just weren't good enough. But for the most part, it seems like I think like any team will have their spurts where they go in a slump, but they're pretty good about finding a way out of that. So I imagine some of it's a struggle, but I think it helps that they have a group that's a veteran group, but also one that's been together for so long.
Scott Powers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com. Scott, thanks very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll talk about tonight's Jets-Rangers game. Minutes before the top of the hour, big thank you to Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com for joining us. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, we'll talk to our good friend Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Also, if you're listening online, it's on TSN1290.ca. So before tomorrow night's Jets-Rangers game, Jets-Blackhawks game, there's tonight's Jets-Rangers game.
This is true.
At Madison Square Garden, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290, of course. And, I look back at this road trip the Jets are currently on, and right now they're 1-0-1 through the first two games. So far successful. Should be 2-0, but 1-0-1. It's hard to believe that tomorrow night on the second half of a back-to-back with a fair bit of travel involved, the Jets are going to go into Chicago and really succeed.
That's fair.
Hard to believe that that's going to happen.
That's fair.
I look at this game tonight against the Rangers, and I say it's a very important game for the Jets to really make this road trip a success. Because if they lose tonight in regulation, all of a sudden you're looking at a road trip of 1-2-1.
Just to know, Chicago does play tonight in Toronto.
I know, Chicago plays in Toronto, but it's a lot easier of travel from Toronto to Chicago than it is from New York to Chicago. Well, maybe not that
Drew.
Much. Maybe not that much. But anyways, the Blackhawks are a better team.
What are you, the pilot from Seinfeld here?
Yeah, the Blackhawks are a better team. Yeah, the Leafs, you're right. The Blackhawks play in Toronto against the Leafs.
I agree with you, though. The Jets are coming to the end of a road trip, playing a Ranger team. It's a tough team, tougher team to play against, talent-wise, than the Leafs are.
That's right.
Then the Leafs are
for the Blackhawks, you're
right,
saying.
Right, exactly.
So if the Jets can win tonight at Madison Square Garden, a place they've had some success, they won there
last year,
2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken?
I don't know if 2 years ago. They won last year.
Not the game that we went to 3 years ago.
Right. They didn't win that one. But
they'd be playing with house money on the Sunday night.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You go into Chicago. If you win tonight, you're at that point in time, you're 2-0-1 on the road trip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And no matter what happens in Chicago, if you lose 3-0 or you lose 6-0 or you lose 2-1, and you finish the road trip at 2-1-1. Mm-hmm. If you had told every Jets fan and the players in that room before this four-game trip starts, you're going to go 2-1-1. Every one of those players would have probably taken that and said, thank you very much.
Yeah, I was expecting the Jets to get 4 points out of this road trip. That's what I was expecting. Not hoping for, expecting. And you look at this New York Rangers team, and aside from Rick Nash, who's putting the puck in the net for this team?
Nash has been incredible.
It's really remarkable, Richie. He's got 9 goals already, and this Rangers team. And I talked about this when we were doing our season preview show a month ago. You know, this team really misses some of those key pieces from last year. And I know that Benoit Pouliot and Brian Boyle aren't exactly Yager and Lemieux, But you look at this team, and you know they brought in Kevin Hayes, who was drafted by Chicago and then went to college, and then they signed him as a free agent. They've had a lot of trouble finding, really similar to the Chicago Blackhawks, a balance there on the lines. And a guy like Matt Zuccarello, who was their top scorer last year, he had a 3-point game the other night. Aside from that, I think he has 5 points on the season. Like they're having trouble scoring. They're having four points. So he's having trouble. They're having trouble scoring goals right now. And to me, this team still, though, is unbelievable from the net out. And I know Henrik Lundqvist has struggled.
Yeah.
He struggled. But, I mean, he's still he's still a top goaltender in the NHL. And you look at that defense, and you know Dan Boyle is out right now. But it's still a top defense, in my opinion. You know, they miss John Moore being out.
The defense, I mean, you look at the, you're playing the Rangers at a time when you're actually catching them at a good time in that they do have injuries. Dan Boyle out of the lineup. He's been injured, you know, for the most of the season.
Yep.
Derek Stepan hasn't played yet.
Apparently, he's back on Monday.
Yeah, he's getting closer. Yeah. He was skating with the team in the non-contact jersey, but the Jets, again, won't see him. John Moore suspended for 5 games, so you won't see him. You look at the Rangers, and they're not at full strength, and there's not... I mean, you know, Rick Nash has been dominant, but to your point, Desi, aside from Rick Nash, the offense is pretty dried up there.
Well, look after their top two lines.
Sure. Well, I mean, their bottom line of, you know, first of all, their fourth line of Tanner Glass, Chris Mueller, and Anthony Duclair isn't scaring anybody.
Yeah, Anthony Duclair has been a good story coming out of the QMJHL.
Sure.
And he wasn't expected to make the team, and he's contributed a little bit offensively, but you're expecting a lot out of rookies.
Yeah,
and you've had guys like Jesper Fast and JT Miller who can't crack the lineup, and then you brought in Ryan Malone to kind of provide that veteran presence. He hasn't really been in the lineup that much. It's a patchwork team right now. They haven't been able to. And I know they're playing 500 right now, and they're still kind of floating above water there, around 8th or 9th in the Eastern Conference. But to me, this is a team, you know, and I'll use a Richie Pollock word here. It's a team that's lost its identity, I think, a little bit.
Well, you know, I think so right now. I would agree with that. Stepan is such a huge addition to the lineup because center is such an important position, of course. But, you know, he's obviously a talented player. He adds a size element. He can score. Sure, Boyle and Moore. And Moore really Moore is a very talented player. A guy's exceptional skater for his size, but, you know, not the smartest guy out there. You know, an example would be that ridiculous hit on Eric Halla this past week. Although that was a nice comeback for the Rangers. And if you watch that game, that was a fast-paced game. And they can... The Rangers are going to be, like, the Rangers-Jets game will be a skating game tonight. It's not going to be a very physical game. It's going to be a skating game. And again, I've said, I think the Jets flourish generally in skating games, and they struggle, I think, against bigger, tougher teams.
Sure.
So, I think the matchup, now, you're looking at still the core on the back end, which is Staal, McDonough, Girardi. And you're still looking at Lundqvist being that guy. Now, Lundqvist has struggled. But again, guys, I mean, so Scott O'Neill was on with HL yesterday. He talks about, you know, there's a bit of a hangover here, and there's some struggles that they have to go through. And I'm not that concerned when I look at the Rangers and I watched them play the other day. I mean, they did look unmotivated at times, but as soon as kind of the Wild game, for example, when they were pushed, they came back and they took control of the game. So I kind of feel like the season will be like that a bit.
Sure. I mean, there's going to be, you know, ebbs and flows, and of course. And I mean, ultimately, I think the Rangers, once they get healthy, are certainly a playoff team in the pretty poor Eastern Conference.
Yes.
But that's a long ways off. All the Winnipeg Jets really have to focus on is here and now.
That's right.
And tonight, they're playing against a somewhat weakened opponent. And, you know, do the Rangers have some... They certainly have some impressive talent on those top two forward lines, and then, you know, with McDonough, Girardi, and Staal. But after that, do you look at the bottom six and you look at the, you know, the bottom three defensemen there, there's opportunities for the Jets to take advantage of the New York Rangers, especially if Henrik Lundqvist isn't in King Lundqvist mode. You know, if he's been struggling and fighting the puck a little bit, the Jets might as well, you know, do what they didn't do against New Jersey, which is shoot the puck.
Well, that's the huge difference, though, Drew. You just nailed it between this team and years past, especially last year, the team that went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Henrik Lundqvist has always been their best player. And I mean that in the best way, because he's been unbeatable at times.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, come on, guys. The Montreal Canadiens can score on him at times. And so you look at you look at Henrik Lundqvist now, and he's not playing that top level. It's 10 games. Sure. You don't want to get too excited here, just like you don't want to get too excited about the way Andrei Pavlik has played, because on the flip side, Andrei Pavlik, to me, is playing the best he's played since the first year he was the Jets were here, I think. And you look at Henrik Lundqvist, and he's struggling. He's fighting the puck a little bit. But when Henrik Lundqvist is on his game, he's best goalie in the league.
And he's going to be on his game probably by game 20, 30, 40, 50.
It might start today.
So it might start today. You never know with Henrik Lundqvist. Yeah. But if it doesn't start today, the Jets should thank their lucky stars. They're getting him in a down point in the season.
Is it Lundqvist or Lundqvist?
I guess.
I've always said Lundqvist.
I'm more of a Kvist guy, but.
He is a QV.
Yeah.
But I thought that was pronounced. Do we know anybody that's Swedish?
I don't know. I can check the pronunciation guide if you want.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper to continue our talk about the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Oh. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers, Andrew Gross. Andrew, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. I hope everyone had a good summer out there, and it's good to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Always good to talk hockey with you, Andrew, and hope the same for you. Did you go out trick-or-treating last night?
You know what? My kids are a little bit on the older side, so their version of trick-or-treating is there was a sleepover at the house. Everyone brought a bag of candy. They watched scary movies, and they traded candy with each other. So it was a little bit on the, the easy way outside.
I'm sure you weren't complaining about that. That's a very nice way to go about it. Rangers have started the season, Andrew, 5-4 through their first 9 games. They have 10 points so far. Yet you look at the team, and it's really been Rick Nash, the driving force on the offense. Is the lack of sort of secondary scoring behind Rick Nash an area of concern for this team so far?
I think it's been a trickle down effect. You know, they're missing two key components through the first 9 games, obviously, with Derek Stepan being out, and also their power play quarterback Dan Boyle being out, and that plus the fact that they're not getting a lot of power play opportunities. It's kind of limited their scoring chances. They're still trying to figure out their line combinations, and it's kind of a work in progress now. I think they certainly would have hoped for more production out of a Matt Zuccarello right now, or maybe even a little bit more from Derek Brassard. But Rick Nash has really been carrying the weight of the team so far.
Andrew, why has Nash been so good, especially after some of the struggles he went through in the playoffs?
He had a full summer to really condition himself. He came into training camp in really good shape. Elaine Vigneault talked several times about how his conditioning tests this year compared to the previous year. Not that they were night and day, but it was a significant upgrade. And Rick Nash throughout his career has always been a very, very streaky player. And right now, be it confidence or, certainly, having the 9 goals in 9 games is going to give you confidence. Mm-hmm. But, he's finishing his chances right now. Alain Vigneault always talks about he was getting his chances in the playoffs last year. He just couldn't finish, and right now he's able to finish those chances. And, I was talking to Rick about it a couple of games ago, and he kind of gave me the shrug of the shoulder. He's basically talking about himself, said, look, when they go in, they go in. But when they don't go in, they definitely don't go in. So he's on a good streak right now, and it's sort of like he doesn't want to jinx it by thinking about it too much.
Andrew, you just tweeted about this. The Rangers have 15 games coming up here in November in 29 days, and then you mentioned that Cam Talbot's probably going to get three or four starts within those 15 games. Is this stretch here in November, and considering that the New York Rangers have been basically playing 500 hockey here in 10th place in the Eastern Conference, are they going to look back at this and say, November, that was really a make-or-break part of the season?
It definitely has the makings of it, especially since they play so many games at Madison Square Garden this month. I think it's a stretch of 11 to 13 or 11 or 14, or here at the Garden. They're in the midst of a four-game homestand right now. They come back with another four-game homestand. So, yeah, I mean, if they're going to rank up the points now, it's certainly laid out on a plate for them this month in terms of, a little bit of home cooking. So, it could be that they look back at November as a pivotal month. Now, having said that, if you go to their last season, they struggled through October and through November and even midway through December, and then they had a 9-game homestand in December, and they struggled through that, and yet they still made it to the Stanley Cup final. So, I mean, as we know, it's all about, how you play, March, February, March, April, going into the postseason. That's when you have to peak then. But these points here at the beginning of the season are just as important. And, the Rangers need to establish a home ice dominance, which has been a struggle for them the past couple of seasons.
Andrew, how's the Marty St. Louis Center experiment gone?
It's sort of by necessity, and it's sort of that they don't have a better option right now. He's very game. Marty is all about the team. He'll do whatever it takes. He's volunteered to go to center. But, he's not going to the Hall of Fame because he's a center. He's going to the Hall of Fame because he's a brilliant wing, So and it kind of takes away a little bit from what he can do. The whole team will get better once Derek Stepan is back in the lineup. It will put the pegs in the correct holes, so to speak.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers ahead of tonight's Jets-Rangers game at Madison Square Garden. Andrew, we were talking before you came on the previous segment about the Rangers' injuries, and we mentioned Derek Stepan, of course, injured. Dan Boyle's also injured. They brought him over this year. Then you look at the Rangers' power play, and it's third worst in the NHL at 8.7%, and you look at their power play opportunities, and they're dead last with only 23 power play opportunities in the 9 games they've played. How much is the power play missing Dan Boyle on the back end?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were talking about it today with Vigneault, and he said all through training camp, this is how it was structured, that Dan Boyle was going to be the first guy over the boards when you got a power play. And that's been lacking, and they've really struggled to get their shots through from the point. And it seems like every game they're going with a different power play unit. They're just trying to find the right combination. And certainly now with John Moore being suspended as well, that's another potential guy on the point that you don't have, although he wasn't using John Moore necessarily as much, I think, as we would have thought in training camp. But if they're going with the power play unit tonight where they're going to have three right-handers out there, with Chris Mueller and Dan Girardi and Leif Demiak. And, you don't see that too often. So, Davey's throwing a lot of spaghetti against the wall with this power play, and nothing's sticking so far.
Andrew, is there anything, I guess, new as far as the Mark Stahl contract talks go? He's obviously an unrestricted free agent coming up. The last thing that we heard back in September was they weren't negotiating. How do you see the Mark Stahl situation playing itself out?
At this point, not well, for the Rangers. I think it always seems to work out well for the player. The player will get his money, especially, a guy like Mark Stahl. But, the last time I asked him about it, which was maybe a week and a half ago, he just looked at me and said, it's status quo, which means they're at a standstill right now. I think what the Rangers would like to do, doesn't take a genius to figure it out. They signed, you know, Dan Girardi to, what was it, 6 years, $5.5 million last season. And I think that's the template for what they would like to sign Stahl to. And obviously Stahl side sees it a little bit differently right now. And, you know, they're a bit of a loggerhead at it. You know, last season you saw what Glenn Sather did in terms of, you know, Ryan Callahan and Girardi when they were going into, you know, they were in their last year of a contract. You know, Glenn wound up trading Cali down to Tampa Bay and wound up, you know, getting something done with Dan. And, you know, I can't see a team trading a Mark Stahl in the middle of a playoff run. He's just, you know, defenseman like that, just, you know, you don't replace him. It would be too big a blow to a team. But at the same time, you know, Glenn's shown that he doesn't want to lose people for nothing. So, you know, I think both sides are playing a little bit of chicken with each other. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be much movement right now. You know, maybe if the team is really, really struggling, you know, Glenn can do what he did last year with Henrik Lundqvist and get into an extension in December just because the, you know, the team needed Henrik to have some kind of security. But, you know, Mark, as good as he is not on that same level within the team hierarchy as Henrik is. No one is, you know. So, you know, I see the game of chicken being probably extended, you know, into the new year at this point.
You mentioned Henrik Lundqvist, Andrew, and you know, obviously that's the guy in New York. He's the reason, really, one of the main reasons they made it all the way to the finals last year. He's allowed 25 goals in 8 games, which is uncharacteristic of usual Lundqvist play. Is it just a matter of time before he gets going, or is there some reason for concern?
No. You know what? I don't, even last season when Henrik was you know, scuffling into December, I don't think you really really worried about him. You know what? A lot of what Henrik is going through, and yeah, you know, he's given up some longer rebounds than he normally does. But in most games, he's been the only reason why the score has actually stayed a little bit closer. He's not getting much help defensively right now. I think that's where you point to, and it's not just the bottom end guys on the defense courts. You know, Stahl has gotten off to a rough start this season, and Ryan McDonough's talked about repeatedly how, you know, his timing just isn't there. You know, the brain, the legs and the arms, as he said, or the legs and the hands, they're a half second behind what his brain is thinking. So he's not connecting on those passes. You know, they've just had so many problems getting the transition going and getting the puck out of their own end that, you know, and also just the middle in the slot has been open a lot, way too often. And there's only so many mistakes Henrik can clean up. Now, if you talk to Henrik, he wants to clean up all the mistakes. So, you know, he kind of beats himself up over that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of those goals Henrik had, you know, little to no chance on.
Andrew, we'll let you go on this last question. The Rangers were sort of an active team in free agency, so much so that you're going to see probably 6 players in the lineup tonight that weren't there at the end of last year. A couple of those guys because of injuries, of course. You know, of the 6 new players, Ryan Malone, Lee Stempniak, Tanner Glass, Chris Mueller, Matt Hattenwick, and Michael Koska, which of those 6 do you think has been most impactful on the Rangers so far this season?
Well, Malone's going to be a healthy scratch tonight, so he's out.
That answers my question there about him.
You know what? I mean, I've kind of liked what Stempniak's brought. He's, you know, he's a quiet guy, unassuming, but he's very professional, and, you know, he's played up and down the lineup. He's played on the top line, and he's playing the point on the power play, and he's played on the fourth line. He's just kind of filled whatever hole is necessary. Now, I mean, he's not producing as much as they'd like. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists, but you know what? He's been a good depth signing for him. And I think the other guy that, you know, kind of, he's not great, but, you know, sort of holding his own is Matt Hunwick on defense. You know, they didn't sign him with the idea that he was going to be a top 6 defenseman, but now, you know, if Dan Boyle goes out in the season opener and all of a sudden you have to plug a hole, and, you know, Hunwick won that 7th defenseman's job through training camp, albeit, you know, not a great, against great competition. It was a area of concern going in. So you'd probably say Hunwich is, you know, he's not an impactful player, but he's not hurting him. Let's put it that way. He seems to be improving on a game to game basis. So I would say right now it's Stempniak and Hunwick are the acquisitions they brought in who are probably adding the most to the lineup.
The Rangers and the Jets live from Madison Square Garden tonight at 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Andrew Gross covers the Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, appreciate the time as always.
All right. It's great talking to you. We'll do it again soon.
Likewise, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey for joining us to talk about the Rangers ahead of tonight's Jets-Rangers game here on TSN 1290. Of course, right after us, 1 o'clock, Blue Bomber Game Day. With Darren Bomming, Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby, the Bomber season wraps up today, this afternoon, in Calgary.
Yeah, Darren just came in briefly to prep for the show. It's been a tough end to the season, Drew, to say the least.
Yeah.
Definitely had some improvements this year, but, this game is all about next year, guys. Let's be honest. It's all about guys that are competing for jobs next year because the playoffs aren't in the picture.
They got to be better next year. It's obviously Grey Cup year here in Winnipeg, and if they're struggling like they were this year, it doesn't bode well.
Well, I think you'd agree with this, Drew. You know, we used to be season ticket buddies before we had the falling out, and now we only talk to each other on the show.
Yes. But, and with our legal representation in the room.
No, but I mean... I think they will be better next year. And you look at the promise that Drew Willey has shown, and they've really committed to him. But they've had so many issues, at the running back position, the offensive line position, the import issue. And
it starts with the O-line.
Yeah.
I mean, until they get that settled and they get, a number of solid Canadian starters, everything else doesn't matter.
Well, you look at, a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, Roethlisberger throwing 500 yards. I mean, if he doesn't have protection there, he doesn't have time to throw the ball. I mean, it's just...
Let's leave the football to the other guys, I think.
It's probably for the better. Video review under spotlight again in the NHL this week, and the concept of a coach's challenge and everything else along those lines. It started on Wednesday in the Washington-Detroit game where there was a phantom goaltender interference call.
Well, what was that?
Well, that was...
I mean, what were they seeing there?
I mean, I can understand what they're seeing in that the problem was it was the back official who makes the call. The referee who's not at right next to the goalie. And he sees just a goalie fall down as a player happens to pretty simultaneously skate by him. Now, you would say, well, what made that goalie fall down? Because NHL hockey players don't just trip over air generally. But in this instance, he was wrong and the puck went in the net and the goal was disallowed. And, it was just a disaster, really. The optics of it for the NHL, you don't see a blown call that horrendously that often.
So that's just it. So you don't see it that often. So why are we, because Twitter exists, everybody wants to go on their phone immediately and text about it and tweet about it, and then all the people the writers have to respond, the NHL has to respond. So they missed one call. I mean, how many times do they look at a high stick and just looking at something else and they miss that too? I mean, I don't know. I know it's a goal. I know it's obviously significant. It's one goal in... amongst so many goals every year. The officials are going to make some mistakes. Do we suddenly need now a coach's challenge? Do we need to slow down the games more? 18-minute intermissions and
commercials.
Let's just take it easy here. Everybody loves to overreact in this Twitterverse that we're in. Everybody's got a say, and that's fine, okay? But can we chill on one bad call being made?
But
this is a terrible call.
This was a really bad... If you've seen this play... Right, Luke Glendening barely. I don't even know if he does touch Braden.
No,
Holtby.
He doesn't.
He doesn't
Braden
even
Holtby
touch
just trips over
he
nothing.
Yeah, he's not even
right.
close.
And again, I know what you're saying, Richie. I know that in the day of Twitter, Remus is putting together videos, GIFs, and and then he writes a blog post about it, and then we tweet about that blog post, and then it's retweeted. No, but I agree with you in the grand scheme of things, Richie. It's one bad call, and it's not like it's in the playoffs. I mean, they did beat the Washington Capitals, so it didn't end up costing them the game, but. I think when you see plays like this, you're thinking to yourself, what are they seeing? And there's two refs on the ice, not just one.
They're human.
This isn't the old days when there was only one ref on the ice.
What about the NHL telling them to call as many penalties as possible to inflate goal scoring?
Yeah.
We're not sure that actually happens, but we can suspect it's possible the NHL. Well, we know the NHL wants to clamp down on clutching and grabbing, trips, and goalie protection. So we know that.
Well, the refs,
I'm not saying they're creating penalties, but the idea is the NHL has advised the officials, in the past at least, to clamp down on these things, right? Goalie protection, things like that. So the referees are extra vigilant about that. They want to make sure they cover everything, and sometimes they probably call too much.
I agree with you on both fronts. I agree that I don't think that this concept of coach's challenge is really necessary, because nobody's ever actually been able to explain to me what would be challengeable,
exactly. How
far back, you know. So if it's offside, but, you know, the play continues for a minute and a half, and the defending team had three opportunities to clear the zone, but they couldn't because, you know, they just screwed up three times. You know, should you then be able to go back and review it because it was offside, you know, 2.5 minutes ago?
Slippery slope.
Of course.
I think we're talking about here not so much the coach's challenge. We're talking about the expanded video review and that being in control of
penalties?
Controlled by the refs.
Of penalties?
You know what the code?
Everything that is deemed reviewable, right? And this goes back to kind of the debate I remember we had last year, Richie. Something like goaltender interference.
When it's a bang bang play like we saw between Detroit and Washington on Wednesday night, when it's bang bang like that, penalties called, no goal, pucks in the net. There's no rule that says that those four officials can't get together and discuss that. And what did you see? Are you sure you saw it? Are you sure he didn't just fall down and reverse their call on the ice?
They did that.
In the immediacy.
They did in the LA-Pittsburgh game with Jared Stoll. He was in box, and they pulled him out of the box.
Yeah.
Right.
Probably a reaction somewhat to what happened, because that game was after, I believe, right?
I can check it.
Pretty sure that game was after.
Yeah, I think it was. So it was Thursday night in Pittsburgh, right. Whereas the first incident happened Wednesday night.
But in any event, they got the call right, and you see Mike Johnston complaining about it, but you also see Rick talking on the bench, and you can't hear what the guys are saying, but it seems like Talkett says, yeah, you know, you got it right. And I'm assuming that's what he said. It appeared. He wasn't very angry. In any event, I totally agree with what Drew is trying to say. What Drew has said, excuse me. And that's, you have four officials on the ice. You have eight sets of eyes. Okay? Or four sets of eyes, eight eyes. And all, everybody. Okay?
They're all cyclopses.
Exactly. So, and
biclopses.
And they can all, you know, have a say. And the linesman in that case, on the stole penalty that was rescinded in the Pittsburgh LA game, the linesman, I believe it was, skated over to the referee and said, hey, you know, he wasn't actually, I believe the call was tripping. And I watched the video a few times. There wasn't great video on it, though. That wasn't a trip. And I think Brandon Sutter, who's a player, and he fell. And they pull him out.
Let me just interrupt you. You said it exactly right there. So let's say there is video review for everything. Everything's allowed to be reviewed. Mm-hmm. There wasn't great video of it. You said it right there. So if the video review isn't foolproof, why reinvent the system to begin?
It's also just like, you know, lots of times that first look is the best look when you're right on the ice too. I mean, the video gives you can get close in, but the guy at full speed, you're seeing, you know, not in slow motion, you're seeing exactly what the game's like. What are you going to do? Suddenly review slashes? You're going to review high sticks? Where does it end? Don't understand. People just get fixated on these things, and because it gives them a reason to complain about why their team is struggling or whatever it may be. I just think a coach's challenge. I need a coach throwing a flag on the ice. Like, these games need to be more drawn out.
Well, I'll be honest, Richie. The reason why I asked Drew to talk about it is just so I could get you going. No, but, you know, you mentioned, you know, is slashing and all that. You watch that Jets-Devils game, which we all did, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You see TJ Gagliardi got slashed there. I think it was Andy Green. Do you remember that?
He got high-sticked in the face.
Sorry, high-stick. Yeah. That's what I meant to say.
Throw the challenge
and
flag.
It was it Andy Green?
I'm not 100% sure.
But it was clear that he was high-sticked, because you could see he actually got slashed on the... high-sticked again on the visor and then in the eye, and then he was on the bench, and he wasn't faking it. I mean, he was slashed. He wasn't cut or anything like that. But going back to Richie's point earlier, you want to see these call. You want to see the right call made. And the NHL officials, we've talked to Kerry Fraser about this before, there's checks and balances. They get reviewed independently, but you don't want to slow the game down. Like, you don't want to have a situation like baseball where it's slowed down, because the beauty of hockey, I mean, there's many things I love about hockey, but it's a fast game. And you don't want to slow it down and wait 15 minutes, right, to see if TJ Gagliardi got high-sticked, even though it would give the Jets a penalty, it would give them a man advantage. I don't think you want to get to a point where you're reviewing every little slash and hook.
Those things even out.
They do even out, and until the games are played via computer simulation,
yeah.
there's always a human element involved. And if the and you know, I think the NHL officials get a lot of flack, and I think it's undue flack for the most part in my mind. I think that they do a pretty good job with a very fast game.
Absolutely.
And for the most part, they get the calls right. Now, you know, do calls go against each and every team and the fans hate them? Of course, because fans aren't wired to sit there and say, you know, that was a really well officiated game. I agree with all those calls that went against my team.
That's right.
But for the most part, at that high speed, I think they do a pretty good job, and I'm okay with the human error when it happens, because the alternative is just tedious.
Well, let me get into that, because like NFL, you know, what's a hold in the NFL game? Who knows? I mean, the hold, every play is a hold, right? And you have more referees on the field, officials on the field, than you do in the NHL. And I know that NFL is fast. The hockey's faster. Baseball's a little bit different, but NBA even. You know, I believe you have three referees in the NBA.
I believe.
But at the end of the day, you know, if LeBron James goes to the middle of the, goes to the basket and get a foul, it's all by name. The NHL, for the most part, I mean, there is some reputation there. But it's a fast game. It mostly calls it based on its merits. And I agree with you, Drew. I think you're right on there.
Yeah. I don't want games. I mean, games are inching closer already to 3 hours in length.
Yeah.
And that's too long. And you know, if they're going to start reviewing everything, it'll just be absolutely impossible to enjoy.
It's one issue, okay? One goal that was disallowed. If this happens 10 times over the course of the year, maybe we have a problem. It's one goal. And then suddenly everybody's got to write a blog about it. Everybody's got to talk about it on TV. It's just because everybody needs something to talk about. We're in this day of this new media age.
Drew, who wins in a game? Watson the computer or the Carolina Hurricanes?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.